ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass, and it's a Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. At Pac-Man Joel on Twitter, at Jeremy Branham on Twitter, at Sacked by BMAC on Twitter, 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Blankers, you excited for opening day yet?
I'm getting there. I mean, I kind of lost sight of the fact that it's tomorrow night until we started talking about it yesterday, but you know, I'm glad that real baseball that counts is going to be here because, you know, we've been kind of, aside from the college basketball and the Cougs, I mean, and the Rockets, it's just like it's always nice to have baseball back in the rundown.
That sounded super wet blankety. I'm not going to lie. The opening day's in 24 hours.
Wet blankety, okay? Yeah, that maybe it didn't sound appeasing to you. It's how I felt, and that's what I expressed.
No, it doesn't sound like you're very excited. Like, he'll be here tomorrow. He'll just be here tomorrow. Brian, are you excited for opening day?
I'm ecstatic for opening day.
Okay. Okay. Analyze that one.
Well, he's more excited than you.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't take much analysis. Like, it's pretty simple.
So I guess we have to add that to the list. We can't hire Joel to be our defense attorney, and we can't hire him to pump us up about opening day.
He can't be our hype man for opening
hype
day.
Hype man, there you go, yep.
In front of, before game one of 162, which is in less than 24 hours, a.k.a. 6:05 first pitch tomorrow night, at Minute Maid Park, game one of the four games. I'm excited. I will admit that it has snuck up on us. I think that it got here quicker than it usually feels. I think there's two things, at least from in my world, that kind of lead to that. One is the Texans went deeper into the playoffs, so it feels like, okay, less distance between the end of football season to the beginning of baseball season. And quite frankly, prior to this season for the Texans in the previous 3 years, the season was over before the season ever began. So we were probably looking forward to Astros opening day, like week three of the NFL season. Mm-hmm. And then March Madness. You know, if you still have a team in it, you know, you're still clearing that hurdle, I think, before you turn. No, I mean, obviously 100% attention is on opening day, but it's like, okay, it's one of a few things. It's not one of the only. But I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. I think the Astros are going to be very, very good. Yet again, I've been on record to say I think they run away with the American League West. And we're going to have Todd Callis on for our first of his weekly visits with the Killer Bees coming up at 3:45. So that'll be a lot of fun. You got 45 minutes to get excited before Todd Callis joins us, Blankers. I think the Astros are going to be good. If we're assuming, like, just breaking down all of Major League Baseball into tiers, and you have, like, your championship tier, you have your contenders to the championship, playoffs, however you want to break down those tiers, where do you think you would have the Astros relative to the rest of Major League Baseball?
I honestly have them, you know, on that top tier. There's a few select teams that are on that top tier. I don't think they've done anything that would lead me to believe anything different. I like the addition of Hader. I like the fact that this team is really solid offensively. And even with all the question marks on the starting pitching while they fight through some injuries, I think that they have more to choose from than just about any other team in baseball when it comes to other starting pitchers. They'll get a good portion of them back throughout the season. And I feel really good that they're going to be in the same kind of position they've been in the last few years.
Yeah, I think they're going to be – you didn't do which tier? Was that at the top tier
for
you?
Yeah, top tier for me.
I have them in the top tier as well. Major League Baseball presented 9 tiers to all of, like, Major League Baseball. And they had the first tier they had as the Big Two, which they didn't have the Astros in the Big Two. The second tier they had World Series or Bust, which is kind of weird. Like, that seems like part of the Big Six or whatever. The third tier they had making the postseasons the minimum bar to clear. The fourth tier, they had the Yankee Zone, which is just the Yankees. Go figure that one team gets an entire tier, and it's the New York Yankees. Surprise, surprise. Tier 5, big winters, competitive summers. The sixth tier that they have is young and extremely interesting. The Reds are one of those teams. I think the Reds are going to be the best of those young and extremely interesting teams. Tier 7, they have competitive, probably. Tier 8, they have direction unclear. And then the ninth tier, they have looking to the future, which you have like your A's, your Nationals, your Rockies, your White Sox. They have the Astros in the second tier here, which is World Series or Bust, which is, you know, that's fine. Mm-hmm. They have 4 teams in that tier. The Astros, actually, I'm going to ask this the other way. Who do you think is in the big two?
It's got to be Braves and Dodgers, right?
Yeah, Braves and Dodgers.
You're exactly right. You can click the link. That's fantastic. The Braves and the Dodgers.
I didn't click the link. I guessed.
I didn't say you did. I just said you can. The Braves and the Dodgers are at the big two. I find this a little bit surprising. I think it's disrespectful to two different teams. I think it's disrespectful to the Astros. The Astros have proven that year in, year out, that they're Final Four teams ever since 2017. I think the Braves are a little bit better than the Astros, but I don't think the Dodgers are. And then the other team that I actually think it's disrespectful to is not really the Rangers, not the defending champions. I actually think it's the Baltimore Orioles. And I know that they don't have the resume of those other teams, but if I had to pick the best four teams in baseball, I would have the Braves, Dodgers, Astros, and Orioles. And I think that those four teams should be on the top tier, not just two of those four.
Yeah, I think that everybody would probably assume, and because of their bank account and their payroll, put the Yankees in there. I don't believe in the Yankees starting pitching. And with Gerrit Cole having the issues with his arm right now, it lessens them even more. Sure, Soto added to that lineup is going to be interesting.
Yankees aren't in those four.
I know, I'm saying a lot of people would expect
the Yankees. They're not even close.
Okay. What I'm trying to say is a lot of people, which I started this by saying this, is a lot of people would think the Yankees should be in there and that they would be in there. And I just don't put them in there. I think that you're legitimately right about the Orioles. Because of the fact that they actually made a savvy move this offseason to add a starting pitcher, which they needed, which we saw. That offensive lineup has, with some of the young guys and some of the guys that had career years, has to do it again. They're as talented as just about anybody in the American League. That's a good young team. They're going to be there for a while.
Yeah. Do you think that the second tier for the Astros is a fair one and not being in that top two tier? Now, the second tier is labeled World Series or bust, so it's like super complimentary for a second tier. It's like as good a name for a second tier as you can give. Like, if you're going to say a team second tier, you're not like, oh, this team's a World Series team, but they do. I just have an issue with them being behind, specifically the Dodgers. Like, I'll give you the Braves on paper are better than the Astros. I'm not giving you the Dodgers.
What's the title of the first tier?
The Big Two.
The Big Two. Okay, well,
Big Two.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the Big Two is also World Series or bust, and they just busted bankrolls and got all kinds of creative to get there. Look, I don't believe in the Dodgers pitching all that much. Their lineup is pretty impressive, especially at the top part of it. But I don't think that there's any kind of separation line where I wouldn't put the Astros right in there with those two teams specifically. I think if I was going to do a top tier, it would probably be the Astros, Dodgers, and Braves. Because I think the Orioles still have some things to prove, and their pitching and their youth has to keep continuing. And they're, like I said, the guys that had careers keep stepping up. I think the three proven teams that should be on the first tier are the Braves, Dodgers, and Astros.
Yeah. Brian, what do you think? Do you think it's a little disrespectful to leave the Astros off of the top tier instead of a big two, not a big three?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you guys. I don't believe – I get why people put the Braves in the top tier. They certainly, I think, on paper have the most talent. I think they have the most, talent that could take a leap up from where they even were last year, and they still had a lot of talent on that team last season. But the problem is, it's a team going back now a couple of years, ever since they won the World Series in 2021, is disappointed. So I don't see how that they've separated themselves necessarily from the Dodgers and the Astros, and I would make that top tier a three-team tier with the Astros, Dodgers, and in Braves.
Yeah. Who do you think the best team in baseball is?
On paper, I would say the Braves.
I don't disagree. I think it's between. I honestly think it's between the Braves and the Astros. And right now, you know, because the Braves are healthier, I'd probably say the Braves.
Yeah, I think that the Braves are the best too. The Dodgers, to me, are super like star and scrubby. Like, I don't love the middle of that team that much. Like, they gave Will Smith $140 million this year, and it's like, okay, he's a pretty good player. I didn't realize he's their middle of the order guy. Like, he hits cleanup for them at times. I don't think he's a very good cleanup man. And like, who they have at the top is obviously very good. Mookie Betts is one of the best offensive players in baseball. Shohei Ohtani is one of the best offensive players in baseball. Now, those two have been stained in controversy. Shohei Ohtani with the recent stuff, and then Mookie Betts with his video guy. But you can't take away from their production. Like, they are really good. Outside of that, like, it's kind of a bunch of mediocrity, and I don't love their pitching staff.
I think you're forgetting
Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, Freddie Freeman's a
damn good hitter.
I did forget about him. You're right. I would throw him in the mix there, too. But everything else is just kind of meh.
Yeah, that's just three guys, though. That's the problem.
Three guys.
I mean, I like Will Smith, but at best, he's a guy that hits about, 285, 290, 20 home runs. He's not this massive difference maker in the heart of a lineup that should be hitting fourth in a cleanup spot. Their top three with Betts and Freeman and Ohtani is probably the best top three, other than maybe the Braves, I think, can make an argument, with especially with Acuna there in the top three. But after that, I don't love their lineup after that, and you got a lot of question marks with the rotation, including, I mean, I think a lot of people are penciling in, you know, at least a strong half season for Walker Buehler, but he's coming off of Tommy John. You don't know how he's going to respond. So there's a lot more question marks, I think, on the Dodgers than people are willing to admit.
They're hoping Carrot Top comes back, too, to contribute. They got a lot of hopes coming on guys coming back from injury as well, and their pitching wasn't that good. They got some young arms they tried to work into the rotation last year, too. I don't believe in the Dodgers pitching much at all, as good as their lineup is. And then, they keep overspending for guys that have maybe had a year or two somewhere else. Now it's Teoscar Hernandez they've added. They're top-heavy in their lineup, for sure, offensively.
All right, so we think that the Astros should be in the conversation with the Braves and the Dodgers. Do we think now they have the Astros, the Orioles, the Phillies, and the Rangers in their World Series or bust? Is there anybody in that foursome that does not belong?
I think the Phillies and the Rangers definitely belong. I think the Rangers, when they start getting some of their pitching back, we talked about how strong their offense is going to be, and you made the point that they're with the young guys they're adding, they have the potential to be better. I think they belong. I think the Phillies definitely, adding pitching to a good offensive lineup, they belong. Who are the other two?
The Orioles and the Astros.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I think all four of those teams belong in the conversation to have a chance to win the World Series.
The one that I would poke holes in are the Rangers. I just hate their pitching staff. Their pitching staff's atrocious, and I know that they won a World Series last year basically with that pitching staff.
Are they just in because they won a World Series?
But probably. Yeah, I mean, probably so.
Yeah, I mean, obviously their offense is going to be lead. They got a great chance to lead the league and run scored, but especially now after having lost out on Jordan Montgomery, you don't know the timeline or even when they get back for DeGrom and Scherzer, how great those two guys will be. I mean, I think they could slug their way to a winning record to, 85 plus, maybe even 90, but I can't see them as quote unquote World Series or bust based upon the pitching staff.
I think that they lost their best guy
from last year.
Their best guy was Jordan Montgomery last year, and he's gone. DeGrom, obviously, super talented. I don't trust DeGrom to be healthy. Max Scherzer has been injury-prone in the last couple of years and is older. He's, in his 40s now. And I know that Verlander's in his 40s, too, but he's not shut down for, the first couple of months of the year. And the Astros also have other pitchers aside from Verlander. The Rangers really don't. They're counting on Dane Dunning, and they're counting on Michael Lorenzen.
Andrew Heaney.
Yeah, there's a collection of mediocrity. Now, their offense is going to carry them, and their offense is good enough to get hot in the postseason and make a run and win the World Series like they did last year. A texter saying Branham is already throwing his negativity towards the Dodgers. Why wouldn't I? What have the Dodgers done other than winning a lot of regular season games over the year and winning a bubble World Series? They've been a major disappointment. The fact that they've won one World Series in the millennium, is that right? Yeah, the last World Series they won before the COVID World Series was in 1988. I was 3 years old. So the Dodgers have won one World Series since I turned four.
I was
30. It was during the COVID year. It was during the COVID year, and they've spent more money than everybody in baseball just about. They're always top three in payroll. The Dodgers, to me, have been one of the most major disappointing franchises in all of Major League Baseball this century.
Yeah, no, that's why I call them the Utah Jazz of Major League Baseball. They're great in the regular season. They don't do anything in the playoffs, and they don't win titles unless it's a COVID year in a 60-game season. You can throw all the money in the world at whatever you want, and the Yankees are starting to look like this, too, over the last several years, in the fact that money doesn't buy you chips the way it used to. And the Dodgers, hey, yay team. This is coming from a texter that's also a big Patriots fan. I guess front runners are the pick of the day, but I don't give the Dodgers too much credit because they didn't come home with the prize at the end of the year, and that's what you're supposed to do when you're a good regular season team.
We don't throw parades for regular season wins around here. 24774 says, sounds like spoiled Astro fans are back on the 3-6 time slot. It's not so much spoiled because I do think they're spoiled fans. I'm not a spoiled fan. It would be more of an arrogant Astro fan, maybe. Maybe a bit pretentious. I see what Scotch is talking about now yesterday.
It's starting to come full circle.
Yeah, it's starting to come full circle. 9648, I agree with Branham for once. Hey, thanks. Outside of L.A.'s Big Three, the rest are mediocre. 6856, oh, it's the Dodger fan. Y'all act like the Astros didn't cheat in 2017. We don't act like the Astros didn't cheat. We're just not ignorant to the fact that everybody was cheating. Yes, the Astros did things that technically were frowned upon in the Major League Baseball circle, as did other teams, all of the other teams. There's no, you're ignorant here a little bit, 747. 7137, where is that zip code from, by the way? 747, you know, on top of your head?
Zip code or area code? 747 is California, I believe. Somewhere in California.
And you wonder why I get snappy with you. Yeah, it's a, what do you know? It's an L.A. County area code. Yeah. What do you know? 713-780-ESPN. I hope you like that COVID championship. It's a lot of fun. 713-780-3776. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Everybody's invited, including L.A. Dodger fans. We're on the YouTube at ESPN Houston. You can find us there. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel. Brian's at Sacked by Me, by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Todd Callis will be joining us at 3:45. More fights in the Fight Club bracket coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Brian makes faces on Wednesday for whatever reason. And we'll get to the worst coaches that the Houston sports has seen over the recent years. 713-780-3776. Also, when we come back, Jordan Montgomery has signed a deal. Should the Astros have done the deal, assuming that Montgomery would have signed with the Astros? And what does it say about this Astros pitching staff and confidence that you have in this rotation? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
9618. Didn't know Blankers was that old. That's mean.
That's I'm the one that said it. Fine.
You are. You are the one that said it. I like self-deprecating humor. Someone said, like, Houston, they have no national titles. Fight fire with fire. I can respect that. 60-30, let's get real. This Astros lineup is not strong. The Rangers have a strong lineup for sure, even if their pitching is not good. I think the Rangers lineup is fantastic. I disagree wholeheartedly, though, on the Astros lineup not being strong. I think the Astros lineup's very good. They finished top, what, 7 last year in baseball?
Yeah.
And they miss 70 games with Jose Altuve. They missed 40 games with Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah.
You had Corey Jolks making a ton of starts, and Chaz McCormick was not. And then you upgrade tremendously at the catcher position offensively. So I disagree. I think the Astros lineup is going to finish top 5 in the American League.
That's what I read the text of Brian in the break going, I mean, you eliminate Maldi and you eliminate injuries, and you're already talking about a team that's worthy of being, you know, a top 10 offense in baseball and everything else you mentioned. It's like, that's just kind of a ludicrous statement.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit fear-mongering, to be honest. 713-780-ESPN, 3209, LAFC MLS trophy is bigger than Dodgers and Lakers bubble championships combined. Yeah, there you go. Let's do it for the MLS.
Both the Lakers and the Dodgers were bubble titles. Wow,
yeah.
Way to go, LA.
Yeah, 4518. I think Renaud Blanco will surprise us this year. I'll have some thoughts on that a little bit later. Key from LA, keep the heat coming, B-Ham. I'm at the cheating Astros all year. I don't know what that means. And in the words of Dylan Brooks, y'all old. How old do you think Key from LA is, just from the sound of his text messages?
35.
I think he's 43. Key from LA, be honest. Honest. Honor system here. 713-780-3776. How old are you? How old are you? You can ask another man that, right?
That's trustworthy.
What's that?
That's trustworthy, asking someone on one of our platforms to be completely honest when we can't do any fact-checking.
There's some guys that I trust. There's some guys that I don't, like King of Twitch, because I've won 2 bets with against him, and he hasn't paid me once. Don't trust him as far as I can throw him. I would trust Key from L.A. I don't know why.
But he's from L.A. Why would you trust a guy from L.A.?
I don't know why. The tenor of his text, I've never seen the dude. All I know is that it's Key from L.A. That's all I know. But from the tenor of his text, because at times he can be honest, he can be like truthful with like where the L.A. state of sports are. You know what I mean? I just have a feeling he's an honest dude. I get that read off of him. I don't know why. I just do. I'm usually a pretty good judge of character.
Mm. Okay.
Did you know that?
I did not.
I am. I'm usually a really good judge of character. You don't agree with that?
Acknowledge me.
Really good judge of character. You disagree?
I'm just amazed that you're patting yourself on the back for it. It's a very random, weird pat on the back, especially
it's
when
one
you're
of my, well, it's one of my best traits. It's one of my few quality traits.
But you're basing
I'm
it on
a really good judge of character. Good judge of character. I'm not talking about in this only instance. I'm talking about my entire life with everybody that I know. I'm a real good judge of character. Like P. Diddy, he went down, saw it coming. I knew it was going to happen.
Come on. I was biting on the bit for a while, but you lost me when you brought in P. Diddy.
Jordan Montgomery signed a one-year, $25 million deal. It's got a vesting option for $25 million next year. First off, as we like to play, whenever these players sign these types of contracts, and we just assume that, you know, if you give him the contract, he's going to come play for you and not go where he went because maybe he likes it there. But would you have given this this deal to Jordan Montgomery?
I would have considered it. You didn't have to correct me if I'm wrong, but you didn't have to give up anything to get
him. So is
that
a yes or a no?
Jesus, you are on one today.
I'm just curious. I asked you the question, and you're beating around the bush.
I can't. I mean, I guess I have to answer and follow into whatever form you want me to answer in.
You're supposed to have a strong stance.
I would consider it, but at the same time, I still feel good about their starting pitching. If this was something that they had done a little earlier, the deal make it's not what Blake Snell was. I think that it would have been nice to have him, but I don't think that they need him. And at this point in the season, I think I'm ready to roll with what they got.
Okay. I would have done it. I would have done it. I think it's a very affordable deal, like $25 million for 1 year. Like, that's okay, cool. And he doesn't carry, I don't believe, I could be wrong. I don't think I'm wrong because I think we looked it up one day during the show. He doesn't carry draft pick compensation like Blake Snell did. I don't think that he has the upside of Blake Snell, but I think that he's immediately one of your top three starters. Ooh. I would bet on Montgomery having a better year than Javier. But I would argue, but
so
I would also say
JV
that Javier.
And Fromber only?
Yeah, and I also think, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if Montgomery has a better year than Verlander, to be honest. Like, he's an older guy. He's had a couple of injuries these last 2 years. What was Montgomery's ERA last year?
It was low threes, but I'll look it up.
Yeah, it might have been better than Verlander's last year. So, like, if you went off the last year's numbers, Montgomery would have been one of your top three starters. He is part of, like, and even if he's not your top three, he's your top four. How many guys are you starting in the playoffs? You're starting four guys. So I would have done this. If you're considering Blake Snell at upwards of nearly $30 million, I would have given Jordan Montgomery 25 for one. Montgomery can opt out of the 25 deal if he makes 10 starts in 24. So maybe it's just a one-year deal. And then the salary vests at $20 million with 10 starts. It's, like, very complicated. It's escalated up based on how many starts that he makes. It could be upwards of $50 million for 2 years. So it's not a long-term commitment. You don't lose the draft pick. He fits squarely into the middle of the rotation. I would have been in favor of the Astros doing this deal. And again, it's not my money because they didn't. I'm not calling Jim Crane cheap, though.
So his ERA overall last year, 320, but just with the Rangers, which was 11 starts, 279.
And then he was phenomenal in the postseason, too.
I'm with Jeremy in this one. I would have absolutely done it just because it's 1 year. Like, some of the – I mean, I get why potentially Jim Crane pushed back on Blake Snell because Blake Snell wanted the second year. And maybe you want to reset and assess what you're going to do next year and not lock yourself in to some more money that will put you in, obviously, higher and higher tax brackets. But with Jordan Montgomery, he's a proven guy in the postseason. Hell, he did it against you last season. And he alleviates, I mean, the questions and concerns we have about, you know, Javier's consistency, the guys like McCullers and Luis Garcia coming back, when is Verlander available? If you add Montgomery to that, not only are you making your starting rotation super deep when everyone is ready to go, but I think you alleviate the early season question marks you have about the starting rotation until everyone's ready to go. So 1 year, I would sign me up. I don't care if it's $25 million. It's totally worth it to me.
It's definitely a more affordable deal. We talked about that at the time when we were kicking around what Snell was looking for. But to me, the bigger thing, too, is Crane's already gone over the tax. He extended himself on Hader. I understand it if for a one-year deal he doesn't want to add $25 million to the bottom line right now. And still leave the possibility open that you can still do some things, have some flexibility as you start the season getting from now until the trade deadline.
The issue with that, though, is now you're losing some of a depleted minor league system. And that's actually the benefit of a Jordan Montgomery, not a Blake Snell, is you don't lose your draft pick. So, like, that's one of the cons of signing Blake Snell that doesn't exist with Jordan Montgomery.
I'm not saying I didn't want Blake Snell either, but I at the time I was considering Montgomery. But based on what I've seen and the fact that from what we're hearing from a medical perspective, too, I don't think that he needs to spend any more on starting pitching. And there would be just like almost a glutton of starting pitching when we start getting guys back. And yes, Brian, you're right. It would make the bullpen in the middle of the bullpen probably a lot stronger. But I think that it still gives you options now without adding $25 million that if they do want to make a move or feel like they have to make a move, whether it be injury-related, bat-related, whatever it is, that they still have, that they're not going to go blow it out of the water, but they could add someone. But
now, Blankers, you say you can't trust McCullers, though, right? Like, you've said that many times.
Right, absolutely.
Okay, but so I can't allow you to say that you're adding the starting pitching in the middle of the summer. Like, you're adding Luis, sure, but you can't count on McCullers if you're somebody that says you can never trust McCullers.
It's not just – you're getting Verlander back. You're going to get Garcia at a certain point. You're going to get Urquidy, I think, at a certain point.
Is he an upgrade over Montgomery, Urquidy?
I'm not saying he's an upgrade over him, no, but I'm saying that you have enough options to get to that'll get you through the majority of this season, and then you'll set up your top four for the playoffs, and I think they'll be just fine.
I'm actually not that far off from you. Like, I'm like at a six. I wish they would have done this deal, but I'm not like mad at it. Probably a little bit more upset at the Blake Snell one, because I think Blake Snell gives you more upside at the top of the rotation. So I'm not like crazy, like banging the table for this. I wish they would have done it, but I'm not losing my mind that they didn't. The only negative I see, though, is the finances. And look, the finances are a big deal for Crane, not calling him cheap. Like, he's going to have a top five payroll in all of baseball, and he's paying into the luxury tax. You can't call him cheap. But I really don't see another negative other than the finances. Do you?
No, I understand
that's
it, though.
That's the deal breaker, finances?
Yeah, it is.
I'm cool with that.
Because he's already went over it, and I don't think he wants to go, you know. There's another level you can get to. He obviously doesn't want to get there. Yeah, I just think he's probably feeling like, I've spent enough for right now.
The pushback would be, though, I mean, they were clearly in on Blake Snell, and it sounds like they were in on to a point where it was 2 years, $50 million. So we're talking about basically 25 per year, and now you get that guy on the one-year deal. I mean, I'm not like, you know, red line, super mad level, you know, 9 out of 10, sure. But I would might maybe go a little bit higher, just because if you're in on Blake Snell, I don't see, and this is a conversation we had in the weeks right before Blake Snell signed, I don't see a massive drop off from Blake Snell, especially when you look at his overall consistency in the years between the Cy Young awards. I don't see a massive drop off. So if you're willing to go 2 years, about $50 million for Blake Snell, I mean, right here, Jordan Montgomery, 1 year, 25. We don't know if Montgomery wanted to be here, so that might be why he ended up in Arizona. But if he was willing, the Astros should have been willing as well.
I have a theory on Crane where he's willing to spend, but he's only going to spend on like top level talent or players that he thinks are top level talent.
I mean, he's like Montgomery up front, though.
I agree with What's Jeremy, that? But I'd take it another step up. I think it's not only top level talent, but that name recognition cachet means something
to him,
too.
He does like cachet,
you're right.
He
saw Jordan Montgomery, you know, up close and personal in the ALCS last year. It's not like this is some unknown guy that came out of, you know, out of nowhere. It just only last season, it's a guy that's been a good to pretty good starter for a number of years, and you saw him in person.
He's solid. I think you saw that had a career year. Now, how many Cy Youngs has he had, Brian?
I was going to say, you're making my point, because to him, Jordan Montgomery, we saw up close and personal. Did the rest of baseball see it? Because the rest of the baseball news knows Justin Verlander. They know Josh Hader. They know big names.
But we're talking about Jim Crane, though. We're not talking about the rest of baseball.
But Jim Crane likes those big names so that everyone in baseball takes notice.
He does. He is a big name guy. There's no doubt about it.
That feels like a miss. I mean, that kind of feels short-sighted to me. I get it. Blake Snell's the bigger name. He's got the two Cy Youngs. But in between those two Cy Youngs, he had two seasons with an ERA north of 420. Jordan Montgomery's consistent. You saw him in person do it in the playoffs.
Sure.
Two-year team last year. And you get him on a one-year shorter deal. I think it makes absolutely no sense to pass on him, if indeed that's what happened with Jim Crane and Jordan Montgomery.
Where does Jordan Montgomery slot into your rotation?
I think he's third.
Where does Blake Snell slot into your rotation?
Fully healthy.
What about Verlander? I mean, is that with or without Verlander?
Hold on. Where does Blake Snell fall into your rotation?
Fully healthy, third. Yeah, I would have Fromber and JV 1-2, fully healthy.
See, the way that I look at it,
Montgomery would both be third.
The way that I look at it from Crane is that he views Snell as his top of the rotation guy, like either one or number two, and he's willing to spend on a top two dude. He's not willing to spend on a middle rotation dude. And I think that's the difference between Snell and
the only reason why he would be. The only reason why he would be three, Brian, is because Fromber might feel like Fromber might have a breakdown if he's not one or two. I think Blake Snell, in their mind and thinking, if they had gotten him, would have been top of the rotation.
713-780 ESPN HRMP listener line. Key said he was 40. So I was closer, but you win because Price is Right rules, right? Because you said 36.
I said 35.
Oh, yeah. So, I said 43, so I was closer, but I was over. So if we're playing Price is Right rules, you won on that one.
I can't do the Price is Right noise when you go over.
50-46, Dodgers and Yankees last year, World Series title is back in the Flintstone day. Jeez. 1604, I enjoy listening to you, Brandon, but you're poo-pooing everything Blankers is saying. Not really. I'm just making them answer a question. Ease off a bit. That stuff turns an enjoyable listener, though I don't want to turn this off. It's Killer Bees, not the Jeremy Knows Best show. No, I'm just forcing him to answer a question. That's it. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. I have three pitches. Three pitches that will make or break the Astros season this year. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. ESPN 92.5. Mike Holla, U of H class of 1990, go Cougs, has been protecting the interests of businesses for nearly 25 years. HRMP provides comprehensive human capital management services, including HR compliance, benefits administration, and payroll. HRMP will also work with you to customize a plan for whatever you need. There's nothing cookie cutter about HRMP. If you need a little help, a lot of help, anything in between, HRMP will create a plan for what you and your business needs. Also, their customer service is second to none. You'll never talk to a stranger on the other side of the line. You'll be calling someone that's familiar with you, familiar with your company. I can speak to that customer service. Anytime I have a question, I always get a quick response. It's very easy to understand. Let HRMP take on the demands of human resources and eliminate your HR burden so you can get back to growing your business. Call now, 281-880-6525. Let HRMP get started on customizing a plan for you. 281-880-6525, or just check them out online. HRP.net. That's HRP.net.
You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
He's Blank. I'm Branham. We are the Killer Bees. ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 713-780-3776. I have three pitches for you, Blankers. That's going to make or break the Astros season. And poo-poo it all you want. Break it apart. Three pitches. Let's start with Framber Valdez. Mm-hmm. Framber Valdez's sinker is one of the three pitches that will make or break this season. We can go back to last year and talk about everything that happened, whether it was the All-Star game, not getting the start, didn't even go to Seattle to participate in the All-Star game because he didn't get the start that he very much wanted. But his sinker started to gain velo in the second half of last year too, added velo to Fromber's sinker. Now it doesn't get the movement. Now you're not getting the ground balls. In turn, it makes Framber a less effective pitcher. I want Framber to get back into the low 90s with that sinker, get the downward action, get the movement, get the ground balls. And if Framber can do that, I think Framber can be back to being a top three, top five Cy Young guy. If he can't, I think we're going to get a Framber that we saw in the second half of last year.
No, I agree with that because I'm on record as saying I think he's going to have that bounce back. I think he's going to be where he needs to be. And we all know he lives off the ground ball. And we know he has to have control and live down in the zone. If he can be down in the zone, and obviously that's the key pitch for him, if he's down in the zone, then he's going to be effective. He's going to have a good year. So I think that's a good one.
Yeah, so that's the first one for the top three pitches that are going to make or break the year, the three pitches that are going to make the break the year for the Astros. The second one's Christian Javier. And I want Javier to develop the changeup, and Javier's working on that changeup. Javier showed the changeup more in spring training. But Christian Javier will forever be determined. He'll always be judged and always get production with his fastball. Mm-hmm. His fastball is his best pitch. The invisible, as we've come to know it, and it's that high fastball up in the zone that looks like it's rising. Javier wasn't getting that vertical movement like we saw in years past, and he was also about a 2 to 3 miles per hour slower with the fastball. The reports in spring have been promising. I think if Javi can throw that fastball like he did in spring and 2 years ago, Javi again can be that high strikeout guy that can shut some teams down. If he doesn't, Christian Javier is going to be a bad contract because he's going to have a high inflated ERA just like he did last year.
Is it fair for me to say that my pushback would be because of how effective the invisible has to be, and we've seen the velo up, as you mentioned, that I think that's the pitch. I think that when he has that pitch, no matter what else he has in his arsenal, he really seems to have a distinct advantage on hitters when he's on the hill. I think it's – I forget how you normally break it down, that we're just looking at it from a different perspective or we're kind of nitpicking a little bit. But for me, it would be if he has that pitch is better than a lot of the best pitches in a lot of pitchers' arsenals in baseball, that's the key to me.
Yeah, that one to me is massive because I don't think Christian Javier is an above-average starter in Major League Baseball if he doesn't have that pitch. I think he throws BP if he doesn't have that pitch. Mm-hmm. Like, his slider's pretty good, but he has trouble throwing a slider for a strike. It's more whenever he's up in the count trying to get a punch out. He has trouble. Like, a lot of pitchers will have, like, a get-it-over curve or get-it-over slider where you're just showing it early in a count because you know the hitter's not going to swing at anything other than a fastball, and you just throw it up there, you jump ahead of the count 0-1. Javier doesn't really have that pitch. The changeup, I think, can help his arsenal, but he's forever going to be what his fastball is. Mm-hmm. And then the final one for you guys is Hunter Brown. I watched this YouTube about Hunter Brown's that hard slider that he throws that a lot of people just call a cutter. Mm-hmm. It was that one of the highest velo sliders in all of Major League Baseball. Some people call it a cutter, but it wasn't very effective. Like he was giving up a lot of contact in like the opposing OPS and stuff was very, very high. I was reading a video where he's turned that hard slider into two different pitches. So he has an extra pitch in his arsenal now. He's kind of forked in the road them two different ways, where now he's throwing a slower slider, and this is a get-it-over slider, so he can get ahead of the count, just show him a slider. Now you start to count 0-1, and you can really attack. And now he's throwing a true cutter, which isn't as hard, but it's getting more movement. He's getting more swing and miss. He's getting more, ride away from a righty. So that's something that I think is going to be a huge factor for Hunter Brown as well, because that cutter, it's sexy. It's a 96-mile-per-hour slider. It's really a cutter, and it's not moving a whole lot, and hitters aren't missing it. I think that's going to go a long way if Hunter Brown can master those two other pitches and how he wants to use them in his arsenal to attack hitters. I think that can turn Hunter Brown into a pretty good pitcher.
Yeah, I had read articles early in camp where they said he was working on a slow curve. I guess that's essentially turned into him creating these two pitches and the slider replaces the off-speed curveball. I don't know if that to be the case for sure, and he doesn't have a slow curve in it or an off-speed curve as well. But I agree with this because my thing was, and I was thinking about this, and I didn't know obviously what your three pitches were, but he has to develop something that's a little bit more off-speed. The biggest thing was that everybody knew that the hard slider and the fastball were coming within a mile and an hour or two of each other. If he could just get the hitter off balance and he could create something that really throws the hitter off with more of a legit off-speed pitch, he could probably become a better pitcher no matter how strong his arm is. So I'm with you. I mean, look, if these things work and he's effective with it and it gets more hitters off balance, then that's exactly what he and the team needs.
Brian, any pitches that stick out to you that
With the pitch off of this list that wasn't included, I would also throw in Justin Verlander's fastball, not because it's necessarily the pitch he has to have to be successful or the pitch we're most worried about. But when you have a guy who's 41 and that velo starts to drop a little bit, kind of like similar to the conversations we've had about Javier, obviously for different reasons, but that fastball velo, as you age, coming off the shoulder, the concerns that delayed the start of a season, if that fastball velo comes down, maybe he's not locating quite the way we had hoped he would, then I think the effectiveness of everything else in his repertoire could possibly suffer. So it'll be interesting to watch. I don't think we've had any radar readings, obviously, on Verlander so far because he's only been throwing bullpens and simulated games. We haven't seen him in a spring training game. So I'd like to see the velo on Verlander's fastball and make sure it's not dropped off too much from last year.
Yeah, I don't – guys that once they turn 40, they usually don't add to their fastball. Like, that's
I'm not asking for an add. It's got to stay consistent because we've seen his strikeout numbers drop three – or at least strikeout per nine – dropped 3 years in a row, and he's a smart enough pitcher, a veteran enough pitcher to be able to figure out ways to pitch around that, around maybe a decrease in his stuff. But if that fastball velo takes a big drop coming off the shoulder injury, then I think we might have a problem.
Is it fair, guys, to throw in any kind of secondary pitch for Montero?
Montero throws like four pitches.
But I don't think he throws them well. I think he lives and dies a lot of times on his fastball. I think if he could just get a true, legit, like a strikeout type pitch, like a slight, maybe an off speed
sliders. His slider's a swing and miss pitch.
As an honorable mention, I would like him to either tune that thing up or find another pitch that could maybe create again something a little bit more off balance.
I mean, it's a tale of two tales. Last year was horrendous, and 2022 is really good.
Yep.
So it's like, yeah, let's tap back into that 2022 slide piece. Just pulling up that slide piece numbers. Last year, his slider had a 500 wOBA, which is not good. Mm-hmm. And then the year before, it was 188. So it's 2 years ago, it was fantastic. Last year, it was not good. So I guess you could go with that. Like, it's like another pitch that will, you know, make or break a certain pitcher for the Astros. Yeah, I think that's a good one. Because 2 years ago was great. Last year was not. Needs to get back to it being good. Let's talk to Todd Callis, the TV voice of the Houston Astros on the Shin. He's making the first of many appearances with the Killer Bees. Todd Callis, the voice of the Stros, next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Found the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line, being joined by the TV voice of the Houston Astros, Todd Callis, making his first of what will be many weekly visits with us. Todd, thanks so much. Excited for the new season. How did you spend the offseason? Get any rest and relaxation?
Yeah, some R&R. We did some travel before the new year, not as much once 2024 hit, but ready to go. It's exciting to be here on the eve of opening day. And I was just at a Memorial Park golf course today, and they're about to kick off their tournament, the Houston, the Texas Children's Houston Open. So, yeah, a lot going on in H-Town this weekend.
TK, I'm curious, right off the jump, we know that Verlander's going to miss some time. We obviously are watching the starting rotation very, very closely. A guy like Blanco comes in. He has an unbelievable spring. They've already penciled him in as being in the rotation to start the season. Is this the year? Is this the guy? Can he completely find it all and put it together and be a guy like a J.P. France from a year ago?
He looks the part, and his numbers were not, you know, just spring training numbers against B-level players. He was pitching against some eighth lineups when he went 15-plus without allowing a run. Finally gave up a run last night to the first batter he faced, Quincy Hamilton, in the Sugar Land Astros game. But yeah, he's 30 years old. He's not fully stretched out, so I'm not anticipating a guy that's going to eat up innings. He's not going to be, you know, in the 160 to 170 innings mark. But he's a guy that if Dana Brown transitioned him from a reliever to a starter last year, if he can give you, you know, 130 to 150 solid innings, they'll take that. And his stuff has been playing. Between him and J.P. France, one of those guys may eventually lose their spot in the rotation just because Verlander's coming back, or Keady's coming back, and then the second half, you're going to have McCullers and Luis Garcia as well. So it'll be interesting. The pitching rotation at the beginning of the year is thin. There's no way around that with the injuries and with, you know, some guys that are still being stretched out. J.P. France hasn't been fully stretched out yet. So it's a little thin early, but if they can survive this little gauntlet early of 20 games in 21 days, featuring a lot of good competition, they'll be really set up well for the rest of the year.
The rotation, but the healthy guys and the injured guys would be a pretty good seven-game series. The four you have healthy with Framber, Javier, France, and you know, Blanco, and then Hunter Brown, of course, and then the injured guys with Verlander, or Keady, Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers. You mentioned the stretch to start the year in the first 3 weeks where you're playing 20 games in 21 days. I saw some quotes from Espada, the most interesting manager in the world, where he said that it's probably unlikely they go to a six-man rotation without Justin Verlander. So this little stretch, is it just hang on for dear life, try to patch these innings together however you can, waiting for that help to finally get there?
Yeah, I'd say that's probably a good assessment of things. I know for sure Joe said to the media yesterday that they're going to go through the first homestand without a six-man rotation. He didn't commit to what's going to happen beyond that. So seven games, you're going to see Framber Valdez go on 4 days rest. You're going to see Christian Javier go on 4 days rest. And after the off day going into the Texas-Kansas City road trip, we'll see how they play it. At that point, they may elect to stay with a five-man. They may elect to go with a six-man. Doesn't sound like they're going to have Justin Verlander go with a full, you know, four or five start rehab assignment like SMP is going through spring training. So they may have Verlander come back, even if he's only stretched out to 50 or 60 pitches. It'll be interesting to see how it works. But you're right. Early on, they're going to go with a five-man, but I don't think that's going to last forever. I think you'll eventually see six guys in their rotation when JV comes back.
DK, you look at what everybody's pointing at now, which is just the middle of that bullpen, because we know that the 7, 8, and 9 is all wrapped up. How important is Montero finding somewhat, even if it's a happy medium, between 2 years ago and then the second half of last season, because of him being that one veteran guy that you know they can count on if you need a guy earlier than the seventh inning?
Yeah, he's critical. Huge. You're right. I mean, you feel good about 7, 8, 9, even though Abreu didn't have his best spring. He's guy that just dominated the league last year. You really don't have too many concerns with him. You'd like to see him have a couple of back-to-back good outings, but we're ready to go now. So hopefully he's ready when the bell rings. Presley and Hader, as good an 8-9 combination as you're going to find in the game. And then you've got Montero. And yes, last year was a struggle, and this year was up and down in spring training. Somewhere in there was a guy that pitched in 2022 and got that 3-year deal because of how well he pitched 2 years ago. He needs to be, if not as good as that year, like you said, somewhere in between. Because, frankly, the other four guys, other than those four, Montero and the back three, are really guys that in the past might not have made the roster on opening day, and they're all on this year's opening day roster. So they haven't named who that roster is. We have a pretty good idea Belak's going to be out on that roster. We think Seth Martinez will probably be on that roster. We'll see what happens with the other two spots. But, those are – Belak and Martinez are guys that were fighting for spots on the pitching staff in the past, and now they're definitely in, and there's two more spots behind them. So, yes, so a long-winded answer to your question, Montero is going to be critical because of the unproven nature of some of the other guys that are making the team.
Todd Kalas, voice of the Houston Astros, joining us on the HRNP guest line. Todd, I want to go all the way back to the beginning of the offseason, if you will allow me, when the Astros hired Joe Espada. And universally, it was a move that was given a lot of credit. The Astros getting Espada, giving him the promotion, have been the right-hand man for Dusty Baker for so long. What makes Espada the right man for this job?
He's been in the trenches, and he knows the guys really well. And he's been here through two different managers, A.J. Hinch and Dusty Baker, two different styles. The guys trust him. They know him. They communicate well with him. They know no matter what happens, he's going to shoot it straight for them. And that goes a long way. I mean, last night and today, I'm sure there were some difficult conversations with Joe, having to call guys in and say, hey, you didn't make it. We appreciate how hard you worked. We'll see you at some point during the regular season. But the guys, it's basically been the whole time AJ was here and Dusty Baker was here and Joe was the bench coach, he has been that guy that was the conduit. So he was talking to the players. He was, the manager delegates a lot at the top, and Joe was always that guy who was involved with the players and been in the trenches with them. So it was a seamless transition, about as seamless a transition as you could have, just based on Joe knowing these guys as a veteran group that has been around Joe for half a dozen years.
TK, I want to look at center field a little bit too, because you've had the eye test up close and personal. You've seen this spring's version of Jake Meyers, which seems more like the Jake Meyers when he came up, when he showed he had some pop, when he showed that he could be the center fielder of the future, and now they're relying on him to do just that. Your feelings on what you've seen so far of Jake, and the fact that your confidence level on him being the everyday center fielder going into the season?
Yeah, more confident now than I was not seeing him before spring training, because he did come in with a different attitude. He was hitting the ball on the screws for the first 2 or 3 weeks. Everybody, it's hard to maintain that for 4 or 5 weeks of spring training games, but he was really good for the first 2 or 3 weeks. In a little bit of bad luck in the second half of spring training. Didn't hit the ball quite as hard overall, but he looked ready to go. And, we all know Jake can go get the ball, but his bat looked really good. If he's your number 9 hitter in your lineup, you're in a pretty good spot. And whoever that is, whether it's Pena 8, Meyers 9, or vice versa, you're going to be in a pretty good spot leading into the Altuve, Alvarez, Tucker, Bregman quartet. I really, really like this lineup this year. I think this is going to be a team, even though last year they were third in the American League of runs scored, I think this is a team that's going to be much better offensively than they were last year. And, I think part of that is Bregman. He'll probably be better than he was last year. Abreu, coming off last year, will probably be better. Pena will probably have room to grow this year. And then you add Yonder Diaz to your lineup. So, yeah, I'm excited about the lineup, and I think Jake Meyers being a part of that in the number 9 spot could bode well. And he he's got pressure too. I mean, even though they've handed him the starting job in center field, let's not be fooled that if Jake doesn't get out of the gates in April and May and perform well, it's not like they're going to sit there and say, this is your job up until the All-Star break. There's a lot of good candidates sitting there behind Jake, and if one of them is high at AAA and Jake's struggling at the big league level, you could see Jake lose some playing time. But for now, I'm glad he's the everyday center fielder. I think he's ready to run with it, and I haven't seen any better version of Jake Meyers than I did in 24 spring training.
Todd, we always appreciate the time. Best of luck with the call tomorrow, opening day. I know you're excited for the year, and you're going to have a little bit more homework because Brian McTaggart's just reported the Astros claim Penn Murphy off of waivers. So maybe he's one of those two unknown names that maybe you already knew in the bullpen for the Stros. Todd, appreciate the time. We'll chat again next week.
All right, guys. Always good talking to you. Talk to you next week.
Todd Kalas joining us on the HRMP guest line. Yeah, Brian McTaggart just claimed that the Stros – or just tweeted that the Stros claim Penn Murphy off of waivers from the Braves. Has never pitched with the Braves other than spring training. His numbers are pretty good. Mm-hmm. He's only pitched in the last 2 years, 2022, 2023. He made 80 appearances with Seattle, and in those 80 appearances, he had a 2.70 ERA. It's weird that this guy is on waivers. He was with the Braves, didn't make their club, and they're really good. Maybe that's why. But surprised that an arm this caliber was on waivers and he lasted to the Astros. This is at least on paper, without knowing too much about, you know, post 2023, seems like a pretty good move for the Astros.
I love it, looking at the numbers, and then Greg Rejon throws out that his claim to fame was he gave up the 18th inning home run in Game 3 of the 2022 ALDS in Seattle to Peña.
So he's been an Astro winner from way back then. He's been helping out the
Astros.
Should
be a fan favorite from the jump.
Yeah, so the Braves claimed Murphy off waivers from the Mets on November 14th. So this guy's been around. His numbers are far better than the respect he's been given by Major League Baseball. He was on waivers claimed by the Braves, on waivers claimed by the Astros. Interesting, to say the least. But Penn Murphy has been claimed by the Houston Astros. All right, 713-780-3776. It's time for three more fights in the Killer Bee Fight Club bracket. Who won yesterday? What are the fights today? And we'll make arguments for everybody. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, we know that, hey, we're a day away from opening day. We're a day away from more NCAA basketball. We've got NBA basketball on the docket just about every single night. And then on the weekends, we've got golf, UFC, and so much more. There's only one place that I always encourage you to go to if you're going to put some action down on any of these games. It's MyBookie.ag. MyBookie.ag is a one-stop shop for all your sports betting and your casino needs, complete with a real-life Vegas experience right from the comfort of your own home and your own phone. Simply put, live dealers standing by if you want to get into casino games. But now you can take your viewing experience to the next level with real-time live betting that lets you stream and bet the games right from the MyBookie.ag website. Sign up now. Take advantage of a generous welcome bonus on your first deposit, all the way up to $1,000. If you put $200 in, get $300 ready to play instantly using our promo code BET975. If you listen to us and bet with them, it pays off when you use the code BET975. And the fun doesn't stop there. You'll get up-to-the-minute odds, props, and this week's expert predictions that all can help you decide who to put your money on. And, of course, those dealers are standing by if you want to play casino games in between games or at off times when there aren't any games to be played. Best part about MyBookie, you can bet on anything, anytime, from anywhere. Just use our promo code BET975 and secure your welcome bonus today only with MyBookie.